Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Oley Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Oley Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Oley Insider podcast. This is Erica Engelhart, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Jay Fratt.
Crime? Hang on a second. We are performing legal, journalistic, citizen volunteer, government overwatch duties. No crime here, but passion for self-governance.
So this has been a jam-packed week in the legislature. There's been a lot of activity. Two of our bills had a hearing in the House Appropriations Committee on last Friday, and then one of our bills was voted on in the Senate on Saturday and passed. So the next step for that bill will be the governor's desk. So before we get to any of that, I want to cover something a little unexpected. We briefly talked about the budget passing last week, but in a surprise turn of events, when it got to Governor Bob Ferguson's desk, he refused to sign it. See, the budget largely relied on a wealth tax imposed on the people of Washington State. Ferguson said that he expects that this will be challenged in court and use that as his reasoning partially as to why he wouldn't sign the bill. He said it's an untested wealth tax, which was actually quite surprising because he was in support of the capital gains tax, which passed not too long ago. He also laid out some ground rules that he would like to see in a budget that he is willing to sign. So here we are with just roughly 20 days left in the legislature, and they are back to the drawing board for the budget.
Yes, and we need to prepare ourselves for a likely event. House Speaker Jenkins has already tipped her hat to this, but she's blamed Congress. And what I'm speaking about is a special session. So in these budgetary years, if the business is not concluded, the governor can call a special session after the session is supposed to have ended. So what we're seeing is this power struggle between Governor Ferguson and the legislative Democrats, where they're not necessarily aligned on this budgetary process. And if the legislative Democrats don't come to Bob Ferguson's side of the table, if you will, he does have the opportunity to call a special session to ask them to go back to the drawing board, whether in whole or in part to the budget. What Speaker Jenkins has tipped her hat to is Medicaid cuts that could be expected in Congress that could impact the Washington budget, which they believe would likely lead to a special session. So we have a couple different angles here that are all showing evidence that we should expect a special session. The session is supposed to conclude, let me look here, April 27th. So that special session would then be about 30 days after that. So Ferguson could call a special session that then lasts an additional 30 days after the session deadline.
Okay, so moving along to cover the bills that we've been following. Two of our bills were in the same hearing in the House Appropriations Committee on Friday. It was SB 5123 and SB 5098. Both of these bills we've talked about quite a bit, but it was a little interesting watching the public hearing for those. We'll start with SB 5123, which is the bill that defines gender identity and gender expression and such, and makes them a protected class in schools. So there was a couple clips from people who supported this bill, just because I think it's important to listen to both sides, but also I was a little confused by them, and I just wanted to get your input on it. So let's take a listen.
Good afternoon, Chair Ormsby and members of the committee. My name is Nate Block. I am a non-binary high school student. I am testifying in strong support of Senate Bill 5123. The updates in language and definitions in this bill are part of what make me proud to be a Washingtonian. When I go to out of state for college in the fall, it will not be because of bills or laws like this, but in spite of them.
Sorry for interrupting, but what? In spite? I thought you said you were supporting the bill. Anyways, let's keep listening.
My only wondering is why it has taken so long to recognize in statute that gender identity and gender expression are distinct from each other and entirely separate from sexual orientation. One of the few ways I could see for this bill to be improved and truly put Washington at the forefront of inclusion and recognition would be to recognize that sexual orientation or romantic orientation are also distinct. They can be different or even conflicting for an individual. This bill conflates them in its definitions. Thank you for and please support this important update to Washington's anti-discrimination language and further my pride in being a Washingtonian. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Am I the only one that was confused by that testimony?
No, I think we're all confused by these terms, these advocacy groups. Even this person is confirmed as confused and conflicted within their own testimony. Very proud of this legislation, and yet that's going to be the reason they go to school out of state? Not quite sure. I think you were right to stop it at that point and question, but I think as soon as we start to get into these gender identity issues and labeling and defining them for sake of codification within law to separate them as identities protected under discrimination, it gets to the heart of it in this ever, I'll use the term, fluid definition set. Seems like it can't be codified. I mean, let children cosplay all they want, but they are protected from discrimination, and we don't need to define their particular peculiarities, whims and wants and wishes for all citizens and all children of the state.
Okay, so moving along, let's listen to another testifier for that same hearing for SB 5123.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Ormsby and committee members. My name is Melanie Moonstone. I am here on behalf of PFLAG Skagit. I'm speaking in strong support of SSB 5123. All children deserve a safe place to learn, regardless of gender and gender identity. Trans kids just want to be kids. They want to feel safe, make friends, and learn. Being trans is not an ideology. It is biological facts.
Biological facts? What? Okay, sorry.
Trans rights are human rights. We owe it to all children to learn in an environment free from discrimination. I'm a master's level addiction counselor at a renowned treatment center, and my LGBTQ plus adult patients, their common story is substance use is heightened, mental health is heightened, suicidality is heightened, and it's because they didn't feel protected or supported as children, and we need to change that narrative for people. I want to treat people who have not been discriminated against as children, and it's just such a heightened a very heightened risk rate for them.
Thank you.
I want to treat people who have not been discriminated against as children. It's very, very confusing language there. That woman was an expert testifying from the organization PFLAG. In our previous coverage of this bill on Ole Insider, we highlighted a gentleman who is also on behalf of PFLAG, parents and friends of lesbians and gays. They also now, of course, their major advocacy is for transgender. And And it's interesting how all of these experts and advocacy groups do not recognize the science of the CAS review that was published by the National Institute of Health in the UK and reversed all of their gender-affirming care policies on the youth. So in Washington State, the advocacy groups are flying in the face of science to keep the status quo of their advocacy, where they're trying to allow children to take the steering wheel for the rest of their lives with the decisions they make in their youth. And for the CAS review, that reversed course in England, and they started promoting more talk therapy. At the heart of that CAS review was the fact that they're neglecting the comorbidity of mental health. In other words, people who are suffering from gender dysphoria often have other underlying mental health issues, and they found that talk therapy and traditional counseling therapy helps with those underlying issues more so than affirming care for someone that has underlying mental health issues. Anyways, very sordid, confusing topic. That will go to executive session on Monday the 7th, and we'll learn more about what that committee executive session decides at that time.
There was also some testimony provided in opposition to the bill, but those were a little more logical and made sense and weren't nearly as entertaining as these were. Okay, moving right along, SB 5098. I'm not going to play any of the public testimony for this bill, but what I do want to pay attention to are the questions by the representatives after the staff member introduced the bill. SB 5098 is one of our gun bills. It would prohibit carrying a weapon in public parks and anywhere where children may be present. Let's listen to the back and forth for a second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This really pertains to the cities and maybe counties. With the state's strong home rule provisions, is there anything stopping cities and counties from enacting an ordinance on their own without having a statewide law on this?
Representative, there are existing state preemption provisions that regulate the restrictions that localities can enact for to restrict where weapons can be carried.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up?
Representative Penner.
Thank you. That wasn't my question. My question, is there anything exempting local jurisdictions from enacting home rule provisions to create this ordinance on their own without state preemption?
Representative, because of the state preemption provision, I don't believe they could adopt those home rule provisions.
Thank you. Additional questions? Representative Connors?
Yes, in the bill brief that you were reading, it said anywhere else that children may be present. What is the liability for cities if they miss somewhere that children might be present under the bill, if it's not specifically just parks and certain areas?
Representative, the restriction applies to parks, the premises of a city, town, county, or other municipality, neighborhood, community, or regional park facility where children are likely to be present. So it would have to be for the bill to apply, it would have to be a park that meets those qualifications, and also it has to be a park where children are likely to be present. If it meets those requirements, then it is subject to the bill's restriction. As to liability, if a local government failed to appropriately designate a park, the bill doesn't specify one way or the other whether there is any sort of immunity from liability or create liability for a failure to act. Generally speaking, the government courts would hesitate to impose liability on local government for this sort of thing in the absence of clear legislative direction. Certainly possible, though, if the courts found that the legislature intended to create a protected class and put an implied cause of action for that reason.
Thank you. Representative Burnett.
Thank you, Chair Ormsby. I know it has the dangerous weapon / knife provision in that. For fairgrounds, I mean, how are you going to have no knives on a fairground, even for FFA people setting up and doing things? I mean, is there an exemption in there for this as far as the people that are going to be working those?
The definition of weapon in the bill does cover knives. There is no carve out for knives on county fairgrounds or for certain uses of knives.
Representative Couture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does this bill essentially ban a gun show at any public building, including a fairgrounds?
Representative, it has a, for the application to county fairs, there is an express carve-out. This is, it does not apply to gun shows on county fairgrounds.
Okay, thanks.
Hypothetically, if there was a gun show in a public building that was not a county fairground, that could create a conflict with the bill.
Now, I believe both of those bills are scheduled for executive session here in just a couple days.
Yes. Monday, April 7th, House Appropriations Committee at 1:30 p.m. That will be both for SB 5098 and SB 5123. So both will be covered in executive session on Monday.
For my last update, we are going to talk about HB 1133, regarding sexually violent predators. This bill was on the floor for debate and was voted on. There was absolutely no opposition to the bill. Everybody voted in support of the bill, and it unanimously passed and is now going to be headed to the governor's desk.
Yes, and we've covered all three of these bills extensively at the Ole Insider podcast. If you want to go back and review past episodes where we covered them as they went through their House of Origin committees, please do so. We get a little bit more in detail on those. Of course, 5098, Here's Your Sign, is more legislation that complicates. And I think what the legislators in their questions were trying to get to is that liability issue, meaning we're imposing these signs. It's ridiculous because criminals are going to behave with criminality regardless of whether there's a sign. And so it opens the state up, it opens up local jurisdictions. If they don't have proper signage and somebody becomes a victim, well, now they can sue that local jurisdiction and or the state, and it opens up quite a bit of liability for simple signage, and that's at the heart, I think, of this dueling ideologies, if you will, of a side that believes that, you know, creating a sign and a rule will somehow alleviate criminality within gun crime. Then also they've got into a little bit of the knives. Okay, now we're legislating knives as well. Next will be fists. You know, in the year 2035, we're going to have legislation on fists. I don't mean to be ridiculous, but the signage legislation does get a little silly when it gets into the weeds. 1133, we've covered extensively. That's an SVP package that I believe is one of those agency request bills from Bob Ferguson when he was Attorney General. So it's likely to be signed by now Governor Bob Ferguson. And I think this is creating extra steps to make it harder with due process for these sexually violent predators that have a high rate of recidivism to continue holding them in custody, to continue societal restraints on their release into the public, if you will. And this comes, it's a reaction to them, Bob Ferguson's own Attorney General's office and the state of Washington, releasing these folks out of McNeil Island into communities. This legislation is trying to create more pathways with due process to hold and judge these folks that have such high recidivism rates and such a deeply personal area of criminality that causes victims, to give a little bit more strength to that process. That's my take on it, and it has received bipartisan support, including pieces of it that came straight from Republicans as well.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.